But I seriously had a look at like death in the eyes, and I tried to write this list of all the things that I need to do before I die, new things. And there wasn't one thing on that list. That list was empty.
So your bucket list was empty?
Yeah, pretty much empty.
Good on
you. I'm good.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Business Insider calls Peter Levine, general partner at Andreessen Horowitz, an
astoundingly accurate futurist. Is that accurate?
That's probably a little bit of overkill, but yeah, I try to.
Well, what have you predicted right? You certainly predicted GitHub right.
Well, that's true. I enjoy thinking out of the box on what some of the new trends might be.
It is an overkill. Andreessen Horowitz invested an original $100 million into GitHub in 2012. Microsoft bought GitHub for $7.5 billion. Peter was also very early to cloud computing.
Other ones have been this whole sort of evolution of cloud computing into edge computing, which has been one of those things that I sort of thought about early on. And one of the
Now, Levine has pulled away from regular investing. We'll get to why later. And instead is gifting millions of his own money to create the Levine Impact Lab to combat climate change.
What is an impact lab?
So the Impact Lab is a joint project with the Honnold Foundation to where I felt we could offer venture capital-like services to nonprofits, okay? And, you know, when I came here to Andreessen Horowitz, there was a new model where Ben and Mark and, you know, the early team, I was part of the early team here, we really did sort of a new model in venture capital where there were a number of services that we provide to companies that was a very new thing at the time. A lot of other venture firms have sort of, you know, done that since those original days.
By which you
days.
Mean the idea that a venture capital firm does more than just writes a check and says good luck.
Correct. And more than just the general partners sitting on boards, right?
It
always would be money plus general partner on the board. Here there's a bunch of additional services, whether it's marketing, fundraising, recruiting, all of those pieces, which every company does those things. And so we have centralized services.
And you're
to
doing
provide
it for
that.
Nonprofits.
And so my view was, why don't we take that model and provide it to nonprofits to where it is more than just the money, right? And in the same way that you just said, for venture capital, it's more than just the money. I believe that the help and services that the Impact Lab can provide to nonprofits will perhaps be transformational for that community.
And this explains why your money that you're giving is a gift, because you can't take a percentage of a nonprofit.
Yeah, right. Coming into this, I had a lot of different, it's actually an interesting point.
Well, because yeah, there are lots of firms that are going to change the world and make it a cleaner place that are going to make money.
Exactly. Like we could have done investing in, you know, do good companies, right? Or just make these gifts, but I wanted to make it less about the monetary return and more about providing a framework where nonprofits can really benefit from the types of programs that we're offering.
As Peter mentioned, his Impact Lab is teaming up with the Honnold Foundation, created by Alex Honnold.
Some of our listeners may not know who that is. Who is Alex Honnold?
Well, Alex Honnold, he's a philanthropist. Because he started, actually, so Alex Honnold is a world-famous professional rock climber, and for those listeners who, well, you'd know Alex Honnold if you saw the movie Free Solo.
Yeah.
He's an incredible athlete and notable for his ascents of these insane
without
rock
ropes.
Walls without a rope, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I often say that people, even with a rope, normal people couldn't do one move that he's doing thousands of these moves on, you know, rock walls all around the world. So he's an incredible athlete. That said, one of the things that I found particularly interesting about Alex, notwithstanding his athleticism and all that, was that very early on, he said, I'm going to take half of my salary and start this Honnold Foundation. Half of his salary in way early days, I mean, was an incredible act of philanthropy on his part.
Let me interrupt and ask a question. I'm sure a listener is thinking to himself, do rock climbers get paid a lot of money?
I'm not a professional rock climber, so I don't know, but—
But nonetheless, half of his salary.
But nonetheless, well, you know, half of a little bit, let's say it's a little bit to start with,
sure.
Half of a little bit is like very interesting.
More than I'm contributing.
Exactly. And so now, I mean, I'm sure with the endorsements and movies and all that, I have no, you know, I of course have no idea, but it's, I'm certain it's gotten greater over the years.
Yeah.
And so, but his commitment early on to go do this with like a little bit and say, I'm going to take half of a little, whatever
sure.
it was,
yeah.
is amazing to me, right? And that's what I really am drawn to, Alex's commitment to give back at that level is really the element that drew me close to him. And then we had a lot of discussion. I've become friends with him over the years. I mean, I go rock climbing myself and ice climbing. I've done a bunch of mountaineering over the course of my life. So we have a common interest there. But I would say that our real interest is in this philanthropic model where both of us, through our collective interests and all that, can, you know, somehow make a change in society.
And you, I mean, I don't question his dedication for a minute, but you also found him to be knowledgeable as far as running a foundation that has anything to do with green energy and environmentally sensitive topics.
He has educated himself on, you know, a lot of the solar projects that they work on. And yeah, the foundation is also run as an independent entity. It's not him that actually spends all the time running it.
Quick fact check on that with Emily Teitsworth, who runs the Honnold Foundation.
You know, he's been really conscious about hiring people who complement his own expertise and perspective. And so we've got a team of people who've worked in the nonprofit and philanthropic space for a long time. And I'm bringing about 20 years of experience working in nonprofits and foundations to this work.
I wanted to share some photos, never before seen photos. And you can see them right on the slide here.
That's a clip from Peter meeting with Alex Honnold at a conference. He's conducting one of those fireside one-on-one interviews. And Peter's showing the audience a picture of himself climbing a wall of ice that seems to be a mile high.
You mentioned you yourself are a climber. During a fireside you conducted with him at a conference, you showed him a picture of you climbing some sort of ice wall.
Describe
that picture to people who can't
see it. Well, so it was a total flex.
It was a joke,
right? I mean, I really do.
Yeah.
Go ice climbing and climb big frozen waterfalls and all that. But it was funny. I've invited Alex to come ice climbing with me, and he's like, oh, it's too cold, whatever, you know, which is sort of the the professional athlete comment that, you know, like, oh, it's too cold for me. You know,
if you invite Shaq to go one-on-one, he's going to find a reason not to do it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like, there's always like the stock answer on why they can't go, right? Yeah, yeah, like, let's stay friends.
But honestly, I've always found ice climbing a little too sketchy, a little too risky.
I know.
Which kind of makes me wonder about how you manage risk.
Alex, speaking at that fireside with Peter.
I genuinely don't like ice climbing.
Okay, fair enough.
It's cold, it's unpleasant, it's really painful, it's dangerous. I mean, it is legitimately dangerous.
Now, we all know the punchline to the joke is because it's there. You know, why climb the mountain? But why climb the mountain?
For me, I think for a lot of climbers, especially in our, let's say for me, where I have there's a whole life outside of climbing. When I'm on a ice wall, a rock wall, you have to be really focused, right? Like, and being in that environment strips away all of the outside commotion that fills our mind, right? And it's one of those purifying moments where if you don't focus, you know, serious shit could happen. So it does require you to kind of let go of the rest of the world. And I find that to be very, very liberating and very relaxing. It's also like most climbs have ratings on them, right? All climbs do, whether ice climbs or rock climbs. And there's always an opportunity to get better. And it's a real sense of satisfaction when you climb to the top of some of these things. And it's like, wow, I actually did it. I mean, it's an amazing feeling to get to the top. And that's why, you know, so it's beyond just because it's there. I mean, there's a real sense of satisfaction. It's tremendously athletic. It's a great workout. And it does allow for me to escape all the, you know, again, the chaos of everyday life.
It is also dangerous.
It is dangerous, no doubt. Of course, without a rope is way more dangerous.
Yes, but it's still dangerous with a rope. Yes.
Yeah, it's.
You said once, I want to double down on life experiences. Why is that?
Well, it's a couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I think I have a blog post on this and all that. Prior to that, I mean, I still did all this climbing and all that. That was a life-changing event for me. And here I'd been healthy my whole life. And, you know, you hear about people getting cancer and you say, well, it can't happen to me. Like, those are those other people. They didn't take care of themselves or whatever. And then it happens to me, right? And what became clear is that, and everyone will say this, like there's more to life than just work and more to life than just like being focused on one thing.
Nobody ever said on their deathbed, I wish I spent more time at work.
Right. But no one everyone like it's a very obvious thing, but then everyone works like all the time. And, you know, it doesn't seem to change and it's fine to work. No question. And, you know, look, if you enjoy working, which I do, I love what I do, then it's great, right? But I think that doubling down on experiences, I have this interesting relative to my cancer diagnosis. I have a really interesting exercise that I went through. So I had a period of time between I was diagnosed and when I had to go for this pretty massive surgery. And I sat down and I said, okay, I'm going to make a list of all the things that I need to do before I die. Like I thought maybe I would die and the surgery was super complicated. I thought, well, you know, I'm going to die on the operating table and then I won't recover, whatever. So I sat down and I tried to write this list of all the things that I need to do before I die, new things. And there wasn't one thing on that list. That list was empty. Okay. So then I made another list, all the repeat experiences that I want to have in my life. And that list was full.
So your bucket list was empty?
Yeah, pretty much empty.
Good on
like
you.
I'm good. I'm good. Like now it seems like, oh, well, like it's really, is it empty and all that? But I seriously had a look at like death in the eyes and say, okay, maybe it was a little bit of self-rationalization. Like I had to be okay with like, this is it. So maybe, but pretty much, I mean, I did really feel, cause I had a number of months there before my surgery. And I said, you know what, if I don't see the Great Wall of China, which I haven't seen, or haven't seen this, you know, all the seven wonders of the world or whatever it is, I'm good. However, the repeat experiences and doubling down on, that's what I mean. And there's a lot of them with friends and family and, you know, just going out again, a lot of outdoor stuff, a lot of being with friends, but what was not on that list was like, you know, work harder, right? It was really doubling down on, and when I say doubling down, it's exactly that. Double down, triple down on experiences. So I'm trying to tick through that list now, right? And this is one of those things, right? Helping, being philanthropic and the future and all that stuff, right?
We started with talking about you being a predictor of the future, and you touched on AI. And I'm sure there are people who want to hear more about that. What is your prediction as far as artificial intelligence and how it will affect us?
Well, I have been a big believer that AI will become a part of every application that we use. So as, you know, as we use applications, and whether they're for professionals or for consumers, AI will become a property of those applications. I'll either even go, I did a TechCrunch thing, a speaking thing a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if folks are familiar with a new program called DALL-E, and that is a way of typing text into your computer. And what's very interesting about DALL-E and what this notion of composite AI is I type in, let's say, you know, dancing panda bears throwing a football. Okay, something crazy, right? And there is no stock image of a dancing panda bear throwing a football, okay? So what composite AI does is it takes that text string and actually creates a picture as if an artist were drawing dancing panda bears
and
throwing
not
a
grabbing
football.
It as say clip art, but
correct.
Rather
there's no,
it knows what a football looks like.
It knows, and it knows what throwing is. It knows what dancing is. Knows
it knows
what
how
panda
big
bear
the football should
knows,
be in relation to the panda
correct.
Bear.
So this is what's called composite AI. Mm-hmm. That the image is actually a composite developed in real time. It's as if you have an artist in the back room sort of drawing this real quickly. And that to me is now, that to me is the start of a very interesting sort of future in whether it's applications or our interface with computers, where you could imagine that being not so much draw me panda bears throwing a football, which is interesting technologically, but imagine for a business, if I said, give me all the sales reps in EMEA that have, you know, beat their quota and sold X number of, you know, things, whatever.
The point being, so you're not instructing the computer what to do. You're instructing the computer, you're requesting the outcome.
Yes. So exactly. And I've used this quote in the past up until right about, you know, a couple of years ago. Applications have given us the data, okay? Now the reverse is going to happen, where the data is actually going to give us the application, okay? That the data is there. We're going to ask the data for information, and it's actually going to create a real program, if you will, or a response based on the data that's in there. So the application doesn't necessarily create the data anymore. It's the data that creates the application. And I think that that's the interesting thing. And these, like, imagine you can ask, you know, and there's so much data out there that I would say deserves to be composited through this textual or, you know, voice interface, whatever it might be. And I think that that will be quite transformational in terms of computing. And we can see it. Like, who thought that you could type something in and a drawing would come up based on a drawing that doesn't exist? It's fascinating.
Peter Levine, general partner at Andreessen Horowitz and founder of the Levine Impact Lab. Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.